A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. I mean, it wasn't as long ago as the last time, because this movie came out like 3 years later, but, you know, whatever. Anyhow, more props were made, and we are going to talk about those more props here on the Prop History Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Prop History Podcast. My name is Mike.
I'm Greg.
And we talk about props.
You wait, sometimes.
Mostly. For the most part.
Yeah.
And of course, as Greg said, or intimated, today is another episode about Star Wars. And in fact, Star Wars Episode 5.
The Empire Strikes Back.
Which first came out in 1980, the same time I came out.
That's gross.
So horrible, but I'm going to stick with it.
All right. Yeah, I would have been, what, 5 and a half?
So did you see
7 and a half.
See it in the theaters?
Yeah, I remember going to see this with my next door neighbor, Chris Dunn. His dad took us to see it, and I got to admit, it's Empire is not my favorite Star Wars movie, like it is everybody else on the planet, but it definitely reinforced my love for Star Wars, for sure.
Right. And of course, we did an episode about Star Wars 2 episodes ago.
Yes.
Because our last episode, we talked to Mr. Brandon Allender from Prop Store.
Yes, that was a lot of fun.
It was pretty cool. We should do that again.
Yeah, we should figure out people that we want to interview. I don't know who we should interview.
Right, but. And then we'll see if they want to actually be on our podcast.
I do kind of sort of have had conversations with an actor that was in Return of the Jedi. Maybe I'll reach out to him.
Oh, that'd be pretty cool.
See if...
Well, I'm going to California next week, so I might run into some people, since I'm supposed to actually be talking to some people in the industry.
Ooh, who are you going to talk to?
Well, one of them is a props master who's actually quite well known, and I don't want to drop names in case they don't want them out there, but...
Yeah, Kanye told me to stop doing that.
Yeah, no. Same with Tay-Tay. She said, leave me be. Stop calling me. And then a couple other prop makers, and then possibly a writer of a very well-known series.
Nice.
So see if any of them are interested in letting us bother them for 45 minutes or so.
That would be awesome.
It would be. So I think it'd be cool.
While you're out there, if you can wrangle up a camera guy, you can just make your own movie.
I know. We got everything. We just need a director at that point.
Nah.
Just wing it.
Wing it.
That's how they do it in Hollywood, isn't it?
Right. Well, I work it.
So, back to Star Wars.
Yes.
So, opening scene of Star Wars is, of course, the probe droid.
Yes.
And you know something about a probe droid, don't you?
Well, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about the probe droid. My buddy on Facebook, Dave Moog, I think that's how you say his last name, M-O-O-G, anyhow. He,
sounds right.
Yeah, we'll go with it. Dave, we talked about this last time, that he is the guy behind Droid Division, which is... A web-based, he designs files for 3D printing, and he just finished the files for the probe droid, and it's massive. It's beautiful, but it's massive.
I want one. Like, I want to do that, but I feel like if we did that, we'd both have a full-size one.
Yeah.
And that would...
We need a shop, like a shop for us. Like,
yeah,
and that
just
would
a
be,
place for yeah. us to put shit, because... This like what 30 or 40 rolls of filament to make it?
It was a lot. I mean, my friend Frank was one of the people that beta tested it, and I want to say it was 30.
Yeah, and I don't feel like I would mind that.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of 3D printers. You have a few 3D printers. I mean, combined, we could probably do it in a relatively quick time for something so
what
huge.
What if we do with scale ones?
I mean, I'd be able to do a scaled one, but there's something about looking over in the corner next to, you know, R5 and the interrogator droid and seeing a full-size probe droid as well.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I want to make a moisture evaporator for the front yard.
Yeah.
Full-size, like 15 feet tall.
Yeah. We could make most of it out of, like, what, PVC and wood, probably?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, do the details on as printable parts and stuff like
that.
Nobody
can seem to ever figure out where my house is. And I figure if I just tell them the moisture evaporator.
Just look for the moisture evaporator. Yeah. It'll stand out.
And it'll also get me off of city water. So.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about making a working one.
I mean, sure, why not?
Why not? Right? Yeah. You know what? Yeah. Who cares? Let's do it.
Put the couple of droids out in the south.
Just have working droids. Yeah. Out in the south farthing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. In the south end. But then I'd be yelling at my kid. If you don't get that, you know, that... droid fixed it by morning, there'll be hell to pay.
You're not going to Tosche Station or having blue milk.
I do love the blue milk.
You had blue milk, didn't
you? I did. Went to a couple weeks ago. Actually, I saw a Pro Droid, too.
Oh, nice.
A couple weeks ago, my wife and I had an opportunity to go to Hollywood Studios in Orlando, Florida, to do the Star Wars stuff. And they had a life-size probe droid hanging in a net, which is really cool.
Oh,
which
nice.
Made me appreciate what Dave has done mm-hmm. even more. But yeah, the blue milk was awesome.
Yeah. So. What did you say what flavor it was? Or
I don't know. It was just good. It was
good. It was flavor good.
It was like a smoothie mm-hmm. that I think it was like soy milk or something like that and fruit flavors. I don't know. It was
That's
good.
Pretty
though.
Cool. Yeah. Well, of course, after we get past the probe droid business, we end up with Luke getting whacked in the face by a wampa and it hangs him upside down.
Yeah. So did we ever figure out exactly like what? I know he was like in a car wreck or something and that's why his face got screwed up.
I think it was a motorcycle accident.
Motorcycle.
And it broke his nose and that completely like just shifted his face a little bit. And that's why he looked so different at the beginning of that movie and throughout the rest of it. And I think it was a motorcycle accident that he was in. And then I think, isn't that kind of the first time we really see the force being used to move an object like that?
Yeah.
Because I don't think we ever see it in A New Hope, because we barely see the force being used for anything.
Well, we see him using the force with the spinny thing.
The target droid, whatever
Man,
it is.
Man, I am not good with words today.
It's okay. So. Doesn't matter. It's Star Wars. It's not real.
Right. The spinny thing.
Yeah. The spinny thing that he fights with his laser sword.
The training remote.
Right. The training remote. That's what it is. Yeah.
So we see that, but like I don't. Well, Obi-Wan uses the force to you know wave people on. Well, you don't need to see his identification.
Yeah, these aren't the droids you're looking for. But I think that's the first time we ever see it used to move an object. Yeah. And then, of course, he whacks the arm off of the wampa, and then leaves it to die. Yeah. I mean. Fair enough. He was self-defense and all, but still, poor creature.
Right.
He's just trying to make a living in the desolate wastes of Hoth.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to find food out there.
Like, probably even harder to find work.
I mean,
not a whole...
It's a one-armed
I bet the economy of Hoth is terrible.
Oh, my God. I mean, like, what do? You know, like, sell ice?
Sell ice. That's it. Sell ice and kill tauntauns. That's the only options. Open for wampas.
I came here to do two things. Sell ice and kill tauntauns.
I'm all out of ice, but he's not. Nope. He's out of tauntauns now. But of course, this is also, I think, the fifth, or no, it's almost the ninth iteration of the DL-44 at this stage, too.
Yeah, why? I mean...
Well, I know that, like, in A New Hope, the scene in the cantina with Greedo, so that was filmed in the United States, and... All the rest of the shots had been filmed in England. And when they made the DL-44s at Bapti Armories, they made the one hero gun, which the main hero gun was, the C-96 Mauser that was used in Naked Runner with Frank Sinatra. And they cut the barrel down and they added all the stuff that they added to it. And that was what we know of as the DL-44. That in our mind is the DL-44. But they had to make more, but they didn't have all the same parts. So they just made a few that looked close. And then when they did all the reshoot stuff for the cantina in the United States, like with when he kills Greedo, because of UK firearms laws, they couldn't export it. So they had to make a new one. But the biggest difference on that gun, of course, is the flash hider in the Greedo scene. And the real, like the main DL-44 that we all know, that flash hider's from an MG-81, which is a German machine gun.
Sure, we all know that.
I do. And we've established that that's something that I know. And then in... the cantina, the flash hider that's on the end of it is actually from an M3 grease gun because the MG-81s were extremely rare in England. They're even more rare in the United States. So they just had what was available and they weren't super concerned about that because nobody was looking at it. It was a split second scene where you see it and they moved on. And by this time in this movie, the scope has changed. The Greeblies on it have changed. And it's a completely different gun at this point. But to most audience members, it's just that's his blaster, and they move on. It's dorks like us that look at it and go, "That's different."
I wonder, you know, like I know, like every actor from Star Wars has been at. Man, when you filmed Star Wars, did you ever think it would become the thing that it is? And they're always like, "Yes, of course, I knew it was going to be the biggest success ever on the planet." But the big question I have would have is like, did you like in a sarcastic, definitely kind of way. It'd be like, did you ever think that you would have dorks all over the, and I include myself as one, dorks all over the planet would be nitpicking like single frames of a shot, like trying to figure out like.
Based on all the interviews I've ever seen with Harrison Ford, I feel like his answer would be, I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Get a life.
Get a life, dork, and move on. Yeah. And of course, we move on to Echo Base and the Battle of Hoth.
Well, taking a half a step back, though, like back to the Wampa scene, like we get to see Luke's new version of the same lightsaber.
Oh, so yeah, because it does change.
It does change a little.
Yeah.
Instead of one flash button, it's got two, and instead of the grips are on different, and there's a piece of tape around the edge, and the D clip is different, and instead of the calculator bubbles, it's got the power strips.
It's from like copper stripping at that point, isn't it? Yeah. Like something like that. And I wonder if it's tied into all of the props going into storage after A New Hope was filmed and then being thrown away.
Oh, I don't know.
Because does that original A New Hope saber exist?
I don't. You know, like we know Brandon owns the Jesus Christ, the Obi-Wan.
The Obi-Wan stunt saber, which was used as the hero,
saber,
in Return of the Jedi.
And I don't know that that Darth Vader saber changed.
I think it stayed the same.
So some of that stuff had to last, but you know, I do know that in episode 4.5, the Christmas special,
that's going to cause some rancor.
that Luke was using what's called a graph light.
That's the little one, isn't it?
It's not that it's little. It's still a three cell. It's just not nearly as pretty.
And I think, isn't that like the one identified part in the X-Wing cockpit too?
Yeah, on the upper right-hand corner of the cockpit. It's sitting there in its full glory. I think they even use the mounts that would have attached it to the camera as the mounts that has it into the dashboard.
Yeah,
of it.
And I think that's one of the few like properly identified parts in that as well.
It's the only one I know of.
Yeah, I'm sure there's other stuff that has been identified, but it's hard to find any information even on the build of those full size X-Wings that they built. Because I think they built two. Because like for Echo Base, they built half of the Millennium Falcon, mostly half of the Millennium Falcon, and then a Y-Wing, and at least one X-Wing, and then all the speeders that they built.
Right.
And they built them. All that was done at Elstree Studios. All the interior shots of Echo Base were at Elstree, and then all the exteriors were done in Norway. And I love that in those exterior shots at Elstree, the father of Star Wars, Ralph McQuarrie, is in the background.
Yeah, isn't he? He's in the scene with Cliff, right?
Yeah, our boy from Cheers. Yeah, he's the dude walking behind him holding like a book in his hand, and that's actually his sketchbook that had all that art in it.
That's amazing.
And it's just cool that Ralph McQuarrie was actually in Star Wars.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Ralph McQuarrie and John Ratzenberger. Like, I need that photo signed.
I feel like they probably drank together at some point.
Yeah.
I want them. My head canon says they did.
Now I have a whole story going on in my head of John Ratzenberger sitting on a stool at a bar talking to Ralph McQuarrie. It's like, you know, the original Stormtroopers, you know.
Trying to tell Ralph McQuarrie his business. Yeah. That sounds typical.
And talking about Betabegas.
Well, and like, I don't know how much of that stuff from Hoth exists anymore. Like the Echo Base stuff. I think most of it's gone, but I love that really showed the infrastructure a little bit, because you had the command center and then there was storage, but then they also showed all the maintenance crews and everybody working to try and get everything to work. And then you move on to the Battle of Hoth, which was shot in Norway.
Yes.
In the coldest winter in 100 years in Norway, they filmed that. And they used the Norwegian Defense Force as a lot of the extras, because they were used to doing that kind of stuff in the cold weather. So it just made sense.
Yeah, we talked about Gus Lopez just for a second last time with Brandon, but I know Gus has a lot of the cold weather gear that was made specifically for those guys to be out there in.
And I love the parkas, the crew parkas that they had. The blue ones. Have you seen those? They're like blue and orange. Very 1980s late 70s, early 80s styling, but they're covered in crew patches and stuff, and they were given out to most of the crew. And of course, they come up for sale occasionally, but they're worth a fortune,
yeah.
And as everything is with this movie. But I love that we move from that to one of my favorite things of all is Phil Tippett's work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the stop motion AT-ATs and the introduction.
We've had this conversation.
We've had this conversation.
It's not an AT-AT.
It's AT-AT.
No, it's not. It's an AT-AT.
Fight me.
There is a whole commercial.
Oh, yeah, a Kenner toy commercial. Yeah, where they call it, I know they call it an AT-AT in that, but there's also the AT-ST, which they introduce in a way in that, because you see it in the background moving, but it's a completely different version than what we see in Return of the Jedi. But if you say AT-AT is AT-AT, do you say AT-ST is AT-ST?
No, it's just an AT-AT. Like, you weren't old enough. Like, I don't know
what to throw that card.
You just weren't old enough.
You don't know.
Like, when I'm 7 and a half, watching these Kenner commercials and seeing, you know, the commercial for you can now own the AT-AT. You know, like, damn it, that's what we're going to call it from the rest of our lives.
Well, you know what? It was a toy company. They didn't know what they're talking about.
So?
But you know what else they got wrong from Return of the Jedi?
What?
So
this isn't Return of the Jedi, it's Empire Strikes Back.
Excuse me, Empire Strikes Back. I'm sorry, I guess I had to be there.
Yeah.
But they got everything wrong. Kenner did, because when they released all of the Bounty Hunter figures, Forlom,
yeah,
and what was the bug looking guy's name? God, I just had it in my head.
There was Zuckus.
Forlom and Zuckus. For years, everybody thought that Forlom was Zuckus and Zuckus was Forlom, because Kenner swapped the names on the cards of the toys. Well, so we can't take them as canon. We can't.
It's still AT-AT. For me, it'll always be AT-AT.
Neat.
It's
AT-AT to me.
You know what? I'll tell you what. You do one of your little TikToks
about
this.
All right. I'm going to do that.
And let's see where people fall on this.
Oh, this ought to start a fight. I love the idea.
Since we don't get a whole lot of like genuine feedback, you know,
for
like,
the podcast. Yeah, no. And if anybody wants to give us feedback, the email is posted up in there. Tell us about what you think about it.
Let's, record with both of us for your TikTok. I'll make my first appearance on your TikTok.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely.
And we'll fight over this.
Yeah. We'll fight it. Let's start a fight over this. I don't care. Let's do it. But anyway, Phil Tippett's amazing stop motion work that was done for that. And of course, it wasn't just Phil Tippett, it was a whole crew of guys.
Right.
But the AT-ATs and the AT-ST for the Battle of Hoth and the beautiful models that they built for that.
See, I thought you were going to say actually the Tauntauns with the stop motion work.
Well, that is also another one that he did that is also gorgeous work.
Yeah.
And that's just absolutely beautiful work that was done. And that's one of those still survives because I believe Tom Spina restored it.
Nice. Yeah, he just, I know that if you're not familiar with Tom Spina, owns a company called Tom Spina Designs and Regal Robot, and we will post links at the podcast page
in our show notes. Yeah,
and but he has recently offered a Phil Tippett version of the Tauntaun, which is
and
really
it's
cool.
Beautiful.
Yeah, everything
as
he
is,
does
everything is beautiful. But Tom Spina also is pretty much responsible for the restoration of almost every single critter from the cantina that survives. Yeah. And he built a bunch of them for a Super Bowl commercial, too.
Yeah, that's kind of what put him on the map, I think.
I'm like, just the dude is, like, him and his crew are just insanely talented and amazing at what they're able to do with these old props.
I feel very fortunate that I actually have one of Tom's pieces that he made before he became Tom Spina. I have a life-size Wicket the Ewok that he made.
I see him right behind me. That's pretty cool.
And so when I become rich and famous, I think I'm just going to have part of my rich and famous salary deducted and go directly to Tom Spina and buy everything that he makes.
It's probably, for me, it's going to just go straight to Prop Store. Yeah. I mean, legitimately, it's probably just going to go to Prop Store anyway. So
I want the life-size Chewbacca that he did.
Oh, yeah. He also did a life-size Hoth Wampa that was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, back in the day.
Yeah, and it was wearable. It was a costume, which is fantastic. So, and I love that.
And I think I think that he was known as Wampa on something. I think that was his username on the RPF back in the day. Was Wampa.
Oh, that makes sense.
So I do know that his email address was BlueSnowl. And it was supposed to be Blue Snag, like Blue Snaggletooth.
Yeah.
And he misspelled it, so.
That makes it funnier.
I tease him about that every once in a while, so.
So, we move on to the mercenaries, to the bounty hunters, because that's what I'm thinking of right now.
Yeah.
So there were six of them. And
there's Dengar.
There's Dengar, IG-88.
Forlom.
Our boy Boba.
Who?
Boba.
Oh, the Boba guy from
from the Christmas special. Yeah, the guy from the
episode
Christmas.
4.5.
Yeah, so 4.5. Oh, this is going to start so many fights. I love it. and then, of course, Zuckuss.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bosk.
Yeah.
And I love all of them for various reasons.
Yeah. Tell me why you like IG-88.
So I love IG-88 because IG-88 is just a prop. He's not a costume of any kind. And he's made mostly from aircraft parts, including his head. Now, a lot of him is actually still unidentified, but his head is the combustion chamber from a Rolls-Royce Derwin engine, the same engine that they pulled the emitters from to use on the lightsabers, on some of the lightsabers.
And
anyway,
the same engine that they used in the cantina scene in A New Hope.
Yeah, that same combustion chamber that makes up his head was used in A New Hope as the, I think they were supposed to be like distilleries or something, dispensers or something. And then he was actually too tall for the set. They built him, and then they took him to the set, and they were like, oh, crap, he's going to hit the ceiling. So they had to build a lower platform for him to stand on. So if you watch the movie, he's actually slightly behind and just below. You can't see his feet for that very reason, because he was just built too tall. But they couldn't go back and rebuild him because they didn't have time. So
get a hacksaw. Just cut his legs off.
And I know his head still exists, and at least his shoulders do, because I think he was disassembled at some point, because he was actually disassembled and reused on Bespin. Because you see him laying against the wall in the scrap room.
Yeah.
And he's painted white at that stage, and I'm not sure why.
Hmm.
So I don't know the whole story behind IG-88. But of course, we see another IG droid in The Mandalorian later. Yeah. So we get to see how they worked and moved, which was great.
And another plug for my buddy Dave at Droid Division. He did files for the IG-88 or IG-11, I guess. There's some differences.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what got me hooked up on printing his files.
Yeah, because you have most of the head done.
Yeah, I have the entire head done.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I'm not going to do any more because I just wanted the head.
You just want the head.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah. But I also, I'm kind of partial to a couple others, like Dengar, because Dengar is just like a really good example of, we need to fill space, so let's pull stuff out of the prop room and put them on a guy. Because all of his armor is reused stormtrooper armor and snowtrooper armor and desert trooper armor. And then like the gloves and belt from the rebel troopers from Hoth. And then Bosk is even like an even better example of reused stuff, because his flight suit is actually an old RAF late 1950s RAF high altitude pressure suit that was first used in an early episode of Doctor Who, and then it was actually used in a couple of other shows as space suits. And the helmet from it ended up being used as the rescue helmet from Alien in 1979 that sat behind the pilot seats.
Oh, nice.
And then, but the first time we see it in Star Wars isn't even on Bosk, it's some rando in the cantina that's walking around in the full suit with the helmet. And then Bosk's head, the first time we see Bosk's head is also in A New Hope. And it's the little squeaky lizard guy who's like squeaking for a drink, you know, and gets it. That's Bosk's head. They just reused everything.
Huh.
And like the little things around his legs that look like they're holding little cylinders.
Yeah.
Those are
the leg flares.
The leg flares from German pilots from World War II.
Well, aren't those the same leg flares that are on the X-Wing pilots?
Yeah, same ones.
So,
and it's just reused props. And I just love that they're like, fill space now with this throwaway scene.
I like the fact that they used Meatloaf to play Dengar.
It wasn't Meatloaf, but close enough. It
looks like Meatloaf.
Yeah. And then like Forlom, or not Forlom, but Zuckuss, his eyes are just bubble wrap. So they used to make his eyes, which is bubble wrap.
Didn't they use bubble wrap in the snow speeder too?
Yeah, on the harnesses. Yeah, this is bubble wrap.
This is new. We'll throw it everywhere.
I think that's what it was. It was like it was new material at the time, so they just throwing it on everything.
We're going to put this here and here. Put it
everywhere. I love it. And then, of course, Boba, who everybody loves, who came from episode 2.0, or was it?
4.5.
4.5, episode 4.5, the dreaded Christmas special.
And yeah, but that Boba scene was awesome.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And then, of course, we don't see Boba, but for like a minute and a half total in the whole movie. But everybody loved him.
Yeah.
And then finally got a proper Boba scene in Mandalore.
I have a memory that I can't. It's Empire Strikes Back memory. Like, I being a kid, and we grew up in southern Indiana in this little town with three stoplights. So there was nothing there. But I remember my dad taking me to like Jeffersonville or Clarksville to like a Sears or a service merchandise or something. And we went downstairs to the toy area and he bought one of those little football games where you run the little blip. And I still actually have that. But there was the 12-inch Boba Fett in the display case. And I really, really, really wanted that, and I didn't get it. Mm. So I didn't ever really own Star Wars toys.
Well, I can say for a fact, growing up, because Star Wars was, when I was 4 or 5 years old, 3 or 4 years old, we were living at March Air Force Base in California. And my dad loved Star Wars. So his two sons obviously love Star Wars as well. Right. So we were littered with Star Wars toys constantly, and I still remember the neighbor kid coming over and smashing my brother's AT-AT.
And beat the hell out of the kid for.
My brother did beat the hell out of him for it.
Should have beaten you for mispronouncing it.
What are you talking about?
Anyhow. Yeah.
So, of all of the Empire Strikes Back, the whole movie. Is there any character or prop that stands out to you that you love, other than the one that hangs in your bedroom?
Oh yeah, so
that's ominous sounding.
Other than that, I mean, that's absolutely my favorite one.
Is it?
Yeah, so he's referring to Han Solo, frozen in carbonite. And if you follow me on Instagram, you'll see that so 20 years ago. All right, so here's the story. This would have been back in 2001. I married my ex-wife, and you know, guys, you know, have bachelor parties and do wild and crazy shit, and it gets nasty and naughty and things that you probably shouldn't do. So my two or three of my best friends come over, and we build a life-size replica of Han Solo frozen in carbonite. In one night.
You wild man.
I know, right? So I had the front casting already, and we went to the store and bought wood and cut it down and got a jigsaw and built it. And then it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, like, we got to paint it. And so we loaded it up in the minivan and took it over to my buddy's house that had a garage, and we painted it. And then we actually ran out of paint at one point. Went to Walmart at like 2:30 in the morning and finished painting it. As soon as it was like the paint is still wet, threw it back in the minivan, drove it home, and we had it hanging on the wall by the time my affianced walked in the door, and we're just sitting there kind of chilling, watching, you know, like third generation Saturday Night Live at 4 o'clock in the morning or whatever we were doing.
Like you do.
Yeah. And she's like, what the fuck? And I'm like,
nerds.
You said go wild.
So you did.
So I built this, you know, 20-something years ago. I guess 20 years ago at this point. And I decided that, like, I've gotten a little bit better at prop building and was able to collect really, really nice castings of the Volvo dashboard that make up the 8 panels on the side. And another guy did electronics for it and was able to get those. And so I was just going to replace the panels because I wanted to make it look better. And then those panels looked really nice compared to the rest of it. So I rebuilt it. And now it hangs in. Our bedroom is super, super big. So it used to be a living room. Now it's a bedroom. So yeah. That's why it's there.
But you have Han and Carbonite hanging on the wall. I have
Han and Carbonite hanging on the wall.
Now, the casting of Han, it's a life cast of his face, obviously. But yes. The body is someone else, isn't it?
It's one of the bounty hunters. Yeah. It's, oh, crap. Because somebody just mentioned that recently, but it was, one of the bounty hunters.
It's not his hands either, is it? It's not Han. It's not Harrison Ford's hands either.
Yeah, I think all of the body is the other dude.
The other actor. Yeah. Like one of the stunt actors from it or something like that.
He's one of the guys that played one of the bounty hunters.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't know who it was.
Don't remember who it was.
Yeah, that's off the top of my head.
Yeah. It's kind of cool, though.
But
those little tidbits.
Yeah, so the guy that did the casting for that is actually, he has a little store or museum or something down on in the Caribbean or something, and he's selling actual castings of Harrison Ford's face.
Oh, wow.
So
that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
So other than that, is there something that stands out to you?
You know, Yoda.
Yoda.
Yeah.
Yeah, good old Yoda. So, I love him. Frank Oz.
Oh, my God.
That puppet doesn't exist anymore either.
I'm not surprised. That original
one just deteriorated, yeah.
Yeah.
The one from Return of the Jedi survives. They kept that one in good shape. But the one from Empire doesn't survive any longer. Also, a lot of people don't realize this. Of course, this Bespin is famous not just for Han and Carbonite, not just for the first time we hear Boba speak or the second time we hear Boba speak. But it's also Ice Cream Man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Will Rod Hood.
Yeah.
That's right. And that thing is actually also on, is with Yoda in one of the training montages that they have there.
Oh, yeah.
You can see it sitting in the background. They just reused it. And of course, it's a Hamilton Beach ice cream maker is all it is.
Right.
But became known as the Camtono, and it's some sort of storage device. And I love all the theories that come about because of Will Rod Hood. Will Rowe is his name, Will Rowe Hood. And actually at Star Wars Celebrations, they have the running of the Will Rowe Hoods.
Yeah. Of course, now you start making me think about Yoda and that scene in Chicka Sticks.
Oh, yeah.
Because Yoda's eating that Chicka Stick.
Yeah. I love that people hunted for years for that lamp, the little light that he grabs, and it finally was found, discovered what it was only like 6 or 7 years ago, what that actual lamp
was.
It's like some desk lamp, some really weird desk lamp. Huh. And I just love that there were people that were obsessed with it, trying to find it, as is the case with prop collectors.
Right.
So.
I saw somebody was making those as replicas recently, and I'm like, man, I kind of want that, but I can't have everything.
Yeah.
Like,
isn't that the worst part? Is that you just can't have everything. Yeah. If I had my druthers, I'd have a full-size filming model of the Event Horizon.
Sure.
But it was 30 feet long, so that's not ideal.
I don't even know if it would fit in my shop. My shop is 30 feet long, but
I think it would barely fit. Like
we could put it in an angle.
Yeah, put it in an angle, but then nothing else could go in here.
Yeah, so when I built my shop, so I have a 24 by 30 shop, and when I built it, one of the considerations was that just in case I could ever fit an Ecto-1 in here.
Yeah.
It'll fit.
But it is tall enough for a TARDIS.
Yeah.
Because there's a TARDIS over there in the corner.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the parameters. It had to be big enough to fit my TARDIS height-wise and long enough to fit an Ecto-1.
Well, you're halfway there.
Yeah.
You just need an Ecto-1 now. This is not Star Wars at all.
No. So Yoda. I remember as a kid trying to buy for Christmas that year, because of my Christmas money, buying the Yoda action figure and the Tauntaun, and mm-hmm. both were sold out.
So. I remember we had the Tauntaun, and I, for the life of me, could not figure out why its belly opened, because I wasn't allowed to watch the movie, because it was considered too violent. And then when
I... Sad panda.
I know. Well, this was also way before the days of VHS. So, or at least before most people could afford them, because VHS players were viciously expensive when they came out.
Sure.
But then when they re-released the movies and I got to see it, I was like, I remember that moment where I was like, that's why the toy's belly opened.
Yeah.
So that I could stuff Luke in there or whomever.
Right.
And I always thought that was fun that they added those little things in the toys. And then I go back and I actually got to play with some of the original toys from that time period. And I was like, how did we survive childhood? Good Lord.
I've made it a point over the years not to collect toys. When I first started getting into prop building, I was selling R2-D2 kits. And people would often be like, hey, will you trade, take a partial trade for this? And I would trade anything as long as I was coming out ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a number of toys, and I ended up getting rid of them. But I've tried really hard not to collect toys because that is a hole that I cannot get into.
That is a dangerous path to tread.
I have friends that have, my friend Brad, he collects action figures, and they're all carded and beautiful, and man, that terrifies me.
And I've seen a couple of collections like that. It was actually a G.I. Joe collection that I got to see once, and it was pretty much everything ever released for G.I. Joe back in the 80s.
Oh, wow.
And all these graded, carded figures and all this. And it was an entire room plus. And
wow.
It was all this advertising stuff that was put in toy stores and stuff. And it was impressive. And it was really cool. And, of course, it took me back because memories and all that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was like, this is hundreds of thousands of dollars right here. that I could spend on props.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so I have to pick one.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I'm a teacher, so there's only so much money.
I'm just a mechanic, so
yeah.
There's only so much money. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
One day we'll become rich and famous.
And then we can own everything.
Right.
But then we'll realize we still can't own everything because we don't have the space. And then we'll just be forced to open a museum.
We could do that.
Oh, yeah. We could get lost in our own museum. It's an Indiana Jones reference.
No. Marcus Brody.
Marcus Brody.
Marcus got lost in his own museum once. Junior.
That's right.
We named the dog Indiana. Yeah,
that's right.
Again, it's a good thing we don't really get comments on this.
Best we don't hear the feedback because it's like, did you guys get to the point?
His Sean Connery accent is horrible. It's
dreadful. So. I love it. Do it again.
That's not what your mother said, Trebek.
I miss Trebek.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Anyway, back to Star Wars.
Yeah.
Star Wars. I love the filming models from Star Wars. That was the first thing that I always look at in a film is the models that are involved in it.
Yeah.
And one of the ones that always has stood out to me is the medical frigate we see at the end because it was based on outboard motors.
I can totally see that.
that was the cue they took for the design. It was based on outboard motors. And that model still exists. In fact, most of the models from Empire Strikes Back still exist. And I just love that one of all of them because it's the most oddly shaped thing in the world. And it looks great. And I've seen the model up close when they did the traveling exhibition. It was down at the Cincinnati Museum of Art. And I got to go see it. And I just remember being completely just aghast at that thing, just seeing it up close. And it, quite frankly, how big it is, because it is enormous. It's about 6 feet in length. And just beautifully detailed from end to end. And it was originally, it was a Ralph McQuarrie design, as of course it was. Right. But I think it was supposed to be something else when he designed it. But still, it looks great. And I think, is that the first time that we see the Super Star Destroyer as well? Or am I thinking Return of the Jedi?
I don't know, to be honest.
Yeah, because this is, because it's on Bespin that he has his fight and loses his hand.
I'm really just thinking about Slave One.
Yeah, Slave One is pretty. Because
wasn't that one designed after like a lamp, like a street lamp?
Yeah, it was a street lamp that they saw, and like that looks like a cool shape. Let's do that. And that's how some props come into being. Sure. Is somebody goes, I like this shape. Let's turn it into a thing. And it's like the most commonly used prop in all of sci-fi TV, and it doesn't really have a name. It just has a designation number. It's the two red neon tubes in between, and it's been in almost every episode of Star Trek from The Next Generation on, it seems like. It was in The Wrath of Khan, it was in Babylon 5, it's Firefly, it's been in just about every sci-fi, and it's sort of an in-joke anymore that it's in a show. I mean, even, it was in Airplane 2, and even in that movie, they made a reference to, what is it? Because William Shatner says, what the hell is this thing? And the guy he's talking to says, I don't know, but it's here and I'm supposed to monitor it. And I love that they call that out. But it's actually made from pool skimmers.
Oh, that's amazing.
And they like the inside of a pool skimmer, like they just pulled that out and they're like, that looks like a cool shape. Let's put some red neon tubes in between it. And it's become the most overused, quite frankly, sci-fi prop ever.
I should recreate that.
I kind of want to because they're readily available. And it's super simple, but it's huge.
Right.
You know, it's quite a large thing. I mean, it was also in The Last Starfighter.
I definitely need to
put it there. Yeah, now you have to have it. Put it next to your arcade machine. But I just love that sometimes that's how props come into being, is they just, inspiration grabs them and then they build it.
Well, I'm inspired by just looking at them, so.
Yeah.
I like recreating them. It's a lot of fun.
If you could own anything from Empire Strikes Back, what would it be?
The interior of the Millennium Falcon.
I'd have IG-88.
Oh, yeah.
The original IG-88. But I don't think he exists. And like I said, I don't think he's complete anymore.
No.
Which sucks.
Yeah. When we were at Hollywood Studios, we got to go on the whatever, I don't know what the ride's called, the Millennium Falcon ride. Yeah, and they did it. The Millennium, or the cockpit, they did a great job with the interior. That, you know, talking about props and pieces and bits and bobs, like they used more of the Volvo dashboard panels inside of that. Like they use the shifter levers to make you go into hyperspace, which were the pistons that came off of 3PO's legs, and the Viscount light that's makes up R2's holo projectors is upside down and stuck on. Like, it's awesome. They did a great job.
And I think some of the seats in that are also from an Aviro Vulcan, the Delta Wing bomber from the Cold War.
Oh, nice.
And there's a whole, I mean, aircraft parts are used all over the place in those props. Yeah. But and I love that the original design when they first concepted the Millennium Falcon was for the cockpit to rotate. And then it was supposed to, basically, we would see it function almost like a sunfish, like it would be upright.
Hmm.
And that's why the gun turrets were in such a weird position, you know, because, like, right, they climb up and down to get into them. Whereas if it was flying in that perspective, they would go side to side.
With the Mandalorian, we get to see that's how Slave One kind of operates. And
I love the way they showed that whole mechanism inside when they're sitting inside it, but they didn't, like, draw attention to it. It was just a background. Everybody knew that's how it worked, but then they showed how it worked, and I really love that they added that in.
That has been one of the things I've enjoyed the most about The Mandalorian, is just getting to further explore, you know, what we already know.
And I do love the little callbacks to toys, too, because, like, when Boba Fett fires his rocket, he leans forward just like you had to with the mail order Boba Fett to fire his rocket. You pushed him forward at his waist, and he'd fire the rocket.
Well, even the gun that he's carrying is the gun from the holiday special. Mm-hmm. So,
and what is it? In the first season, when all the stormtroopers first show up, that transport that they're in, that they all pour out of, was just a Kenner transport. It was the toy, and they built it off that toy. And they really just should have called the Mandalorian Star Wars the fan service.
No, I'm okay with that. Yeah. I, as a fan, I like to be serviced, and John Favreau has done a wonderful job of servicing me.
Yeah, he has. John Favreau is great at servicing people, especially the fans. Him and Dave Filoni. But then they doubled down, because when, and we're just going off the track here like we always do, but Mandalorian, when they brought back Boba, the scenery gets his armor back. I love that when that scene was written, it was like I think it was one page.
Mm-hmm.
The whole scene. And then they're like, here, Robert Rodriguez, massive fan of Boba Fett, do this fight scene. And he's like, fuck that. I'm turning this into a 9-minute fight scene, and Boba Fett's going to be the biggest beast in Star Wars history.
That's awesome.
Which he absolutely was.
So Boba Fett in The Mandalorian is played by Tamara Morrison, who played Jango Fett in the Attack of the Clones or whatever it was.
And in ESB, it was Jeremy Bullock.
Yes. And so I've gotten to meet and work with Jeremy a few times over the years, and he has just always been one of the sweetest guys on the planet. But my favorite story is we had him as a guest for a convention one year, and I'm sitting in the little restaurant that's part of the hotel. And I said hi to him, and he's like, oh, how you doing, mate? And he sits down, and he starts eating my French fries right off my plate. And at the end of it, he's like, oh, dude, sorry, I pinched all your chips. And I'm like, no, I'm going to tell the story for the rest of my life. So,
well, now it is immortalized in podcast form. That's hilarious.
The time that Jeremy Bullock pinched my chips.
I kind of that makes sense, having lived in England at one point and understanding that slang. But for people that don't, that just sounds...
Right?
Yeah. So, but it's pretty cool. I kind of wish that he'd done the whole Bill Murray on you. No one's ever going to believe you.
So I met Jeremy Bullock for the first time about 1997 or 98. They were doing this Men Behind the Mask tour conventions. And he and the guy that played Lobot and Peter Mayhew and Kenny Baker, and I don't know if Anthony Daniels was there, but they were all at this was David Prowse there? Yeah, Dave Prowse was there too. And so they were all at this convention in Cincinnati that I went to, and I was at the bar one night, and so I got to drink with them. That was kind of cool.
That's pretty
Kenny
awesome.
Kenny could put it away. But I had Jeremy sign a Don Post Studios. I had Jeremy sign one, and Dave both signed a Don Post Studios helmet.
Oh, wow.
And my autograph on Jeremy's had faded over the years. And this was one of the very first conventions he did in the United States. And I got him to re-sign it at the very last convention that he did here in the United States using a paint pen. So it'll
last longer.
Last forever, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
So,
well, is there anything else you want to say about ESB?
I don't know. I know everybody thinks it's the most perfect of the Star Wars, and maybe it is for me. I mean, I love it. It's not my favorite, but...
Which is your favorite?
Rogue One. I
love Rogue One.
So
I do. I love Rogue One for a lot of reasons. Mostly just the feel, the aesthetic. The story is really good. The characters are fleshed out. But going back and learning what the movie was supposed to be originally, I'm glad they changed it.
Yeah, I have no idea. I just know that I love it. So.
Well, they were going to have Jedi in it, and Vader was going to show up more, and actually be involved in the fight scene on Scarif and all this other stuff, and they were going to make it really Jedi heavy. And I'm glad they didn't.
Nah,
I'm glad
they left almost
all of that out. And I think it's an extremely good Star Wars movie.
I like that. Knowing, watching it, everybody's going to die.
Yeah.
Everybody has to die because we've never seen them and they can't...
They can't have them anywhere else, yeah. And they even make mention of it when Mon Mothma says that, many Bovans died to bring us this. I don't know what Bovans are, but apparently it was them.
Yeah.
And I love that basically Disney was like, kill them all.
Maybe Bothans means my homies.
It could be. It could be. Maybe. But it's... Yeah, it's just such a well laid out movie.
Yeah.
I do like it. But yeah.
Any last thoughts about Empire for you?
I think it's probably one of the best sequels ever made.
Sure, absolutely.
Because rarely do movies follow up with a sequel that's good.
Except for Break Into Electric Boogaloo.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. I agree with that. But as far as sequels go, it's probably the best sequel to a blockbuster film ever made. And I love it because it introduces so much to the Star Wars universe and the walkers, which we'll not get into that fight again, but and it also it takes the story in a completely different direction where it shows that the good guys can get the crap beat out of them, and they do because the Empire strikes back.
Oh,
that's such a perfect ending. Is there anything that you want to plug here, bud?
Check out Droid Division. If you have a hankering to print a full-size IG-88 or a probe droid, we'll put a link there at the bottom.
And where would people find you on social media, bud?
I'm Greg.Nowling on Instagram is where I put most of my stuff. Although, it's funny, we've been doing this six episodes, and I don't know that I've gotten any... new followers, so
I the podcast barely has any followers on Instagram either. But people listen to the podcast, so that's what matters.
So if you're listening to the podcast, stroke my ego a little and find me. It's Greg GREGG.NOWLING, and you're on every platform
at Props to History, and you can also find me on TikTok at Props to History. YouTube.com/props to history and on Facebook at /makes things. This has been the Prop History Podcast. Thank you very much for listening.
Bye.